Hello, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to our kickoff call for our summer 2019 iteration of the Insulin Resistance Solution Practitioners Training. You guys have all made a great choice in getting here and in joining us for this program because it's going to change your practice, and I will say that it'll probably change your life as you start applying some of these principles to yourself and to your family members, to your clients, to your future clients, and just learning the power that we have to help people to prevent reversible disease and reverse preventable disease. How's that sound? So what we're going to do is do a presentation, and then I will just open up the lines for questions, and we'll just answer whatever questions. I want to hear who you are, where you're from, and what you want to get out of this program. Before I start, I want to know you to know that all of my presentations do start like this in the program, and it's really about the information not being intended as one-on-one not being intended to replace one-on-one care from a qualified medical practitioner. And the reason I include this slide in a practitioner training is, first of all, I want you to understand that from our relationship, yours to mine, that I'm not diagnosing and treating. And sometimes the questions you might ask, I may give you some advice or some guidelines or something related to how I would personally work with that kind of a situation. But also when you're working with people, just to make sure that they understand that you're there to coach them. Unless you're, you know, a medical doctor, endocrinologist, something like that, who's in the position sitting face to face with somebody where diagnosis and treatment is in your whole, you know, repertoire and your state legalities. But for the most part, make sure that people know, because they're looking to us for advice. So they're looking to us to solve their problems, their health problems, and that's not what we're doing. We're actually doing a little bit more than that. And what I want you to know is that the typical approach, the medical approach, is that we ask a lot of questions, we put people in the box, we slap a label on it and call it diagnosis, and then depending on what that diagnosis is, give them the treatment. And you guys are here because you recognize the needs for something else. An instant teleseminar always messes up my slides so you can barely see it. I forgot about that. So we basically go from disease up to unstoppable. And instead of it being a continuum where, from a medical perspective, you're diseased or you're well, we're looking at people as diseased in some cases, imbalanced, balanced, vibrant, and unstoppable. And that's where we want to take them through. And oftentimes, people start it somewhere up towards the top. Maybe they're vibrant. Maybe they are unstoppable, you know, as a newborn, and you fall into balance, but not quite feeling great, but imbalance and then disease. And so that's the criteria that I want us to be looking at for our clients and for the whole world of healthcare, because there's magic in getting to the root cause. It's not just about not doing drugs or surgery and not doing dangerous interventions, because sometimes they're needed. It's about what is the root cause. And if I'm giving someone some work, or they're taking from their doctor some medications or have a procedure that helps them to overcome some symptoms, while we're working on the root cause, that's totally acceptable as well. We just want to make sure that everybody knows that the drugs are just like pulling the battery out in the middle of the night when your smoke detector goes off and you run the risk of the fire happening. And this is what's happening in medicine, only instead of the house going on fire, this is what people are ending up with. You signed up for this because you wanted something different. You signed up for this because you wanted the ability to handle some of those complex cases who've been to multiple doctors and practitioners without being scared out of your mind and knowing what to do step by step. And when you get through this program, that's what you're going to know. And you're going to have the ability that's beyond the capabilities of many doctors who've been in practice for a long time, because they haven't been taught to look at things in the way that you're going to be looking at them. So the opportunity you have signed up for is in-depth training on how to look at the endocrine system and how it works from the inside out, so you can take on those complex cases. And all of the stuff is in your membership site, and I'll show you in a little bit how to access that. Confidence building mentorship in a systematic approach to get to the root cause. And I've been doing this for over 27 years. You signed up for the opportunity when you're done and you get your certification to be listed on our website as a certified practitioner in the Find a Practitioner side. You also signed up for the opportunity to have me and my coaching team coach you, mentor you on implementing an insulin resistance and blood sugar balancing program in your own practice. And maybe you want to have that be, hey, come and join my blood sugar balancing program. And maybe you just want to incorporate it into a health coaching, a whole comprehensive health coaching. Maybe you're a nurse practitioner or a physician's assistant or a medical doctor, a general practitioner who just wants to be able to know this stuff so that as you get those people who are diabetic or pre-diabetic or pre-pre-diabetic, as we'll teach you to understand, you're going to help them in a much more profound way than just making a medication reference or just telling them to come back when it really gets bad. You also have the ability, once you're done, our Shining Star students end up coming back and coaching for us so you can earn while you learn. And we're going to give you some practice building strategies and marketing strategies to help you to put this into practice. And one of the things you got as a bonus for this is my blood sugar balancing presentation in a box. And it's my PowerPoint slides that you will get for presentation that I've actually done that has gotten lots and lots of people to sign up for my blood sugar balancing program. You're going to get my PowerPoint slides. You can use whichever ones you want. You can add your own. You can put your own branding on it. Just go out there and teach this stuff, please, and build your practice from teaching this stuff. So we're here because we want to help people get the blood sugar under control. And some of them are going to know that they have blood sugar imbalance because they've been diagnosed. They may be diagnosed with hypoglycemia. They may be diagnosed with hyperglycemia, which is too much sugar in the blood, which has other names like insulin resistance and diabetes. So we're here to talk about this and dissect it in such a way that you probably haven't seen done before. You also maybe saw me do this presentation in one of the presentations that I did before and leading up to this program, that we really want to catch people before they get diagnosed with insulin resistance, before it turns into metabolic syndrome with all the fat changes and the blood pressure changes and before it becomes diabetes, because by then a lot of damage has already been done. And in tonight's presentation, I'm going to get you started looking at that. And then throughout the modules, you're going to go deeper and deeper and deeper. Some of this stuff is repetitious because it's stuff I want you to know. I want you to understand, and you'll see some of these slides and some of the conversations in multiple modules just so that you get it. But they start out years ago, even 30 years ago, unbeknownst, running around with hyperinsulinemia, producing too much insulin as a result of what? You know, too much carbohydrate in the diet, too much sugar in the diet, processed foods, et cetera. Some of them may notice that even as a small child, I was 6 and I always had to eat every 2 hours or I felt like lightheaded. And then they get into this stage where we're going to teach you how to assess and discover if they're in a state of pre-insulin resistance based on conventional medical testing, but used in a different way. So I'm just giving you the overview tonight. This is the kickoff call, and the website is loaded with great information. I want to remind you that there are actually multiple types of diabetes, not just type 1 and type 2, but there's type 1.5, which we also call LADA, latent adult autoimmune diabetes of adulthood, which is actually like a type 1, but it comes on in adulthood and it has a lot of the antibodies there. Type 1 is an autoimmune disease. The other thing about type 2 is it's also been discovered that there's a lot of autoimmune going on in a type 2 diabetes with the insulin receptors getting damaged, but it's not the same. So when that happens in adulthood, it's a type 1.5, let's just say. And we'll talk more about that as the program progresses, especially in the assessment module. I'll give you all of the testing that you can do for that. The type 2, so we used to say juvenile onset type 1, and adult onset type 2. Now we don't quite call it that. We call it autoimmune and insulin resistance type. And then type three, in the last half a decade or so, people are starting to call Alzheimer's type three diabetes because we're finding that it's actually an insulin resistance of the brain. Very, very interesting. So we're going to go through in the program in module, I don't know if we have them numbered, but two or three is the assessments module. And we're going to go through all of the testing, and you're going to get ranges, reference ranges, et cetera. But it's not just about testing fasting glucose or even just about testing glucose and hemoglobin A1C. There's a whole bunch more that goes into seeing if this person is at risk. We look at the fasting glucose, sure. We look at the fasting insulin, which is so often overlooked. We look at another thing called C-peptide, which we'll talk more about later. Triglycerides, they're fat in the blood, or actually it's three glyceride molecules hopped on together, and it's actually one of the lipids that are tested on the lipid panel. And the ratio between triglycerides and HDL is super important. Early indicator of insulin resistance. There's another new test called GlycoMark, and we're going to be adding a little bit of extra education to the program on especially some of the testing that's newer. Like GlycoMark's very, very recent, and I'll be doing a short training and inserting it into the program, and maybe we'll even do it live. We'll see how time permits. But I want you to hear more about that, and along with that and the C-peptide, which they're super important. The hemoglobin A1C, which is an estimate of the average of the blood glucose over the past 3 months, but really it is how many of the red blood cells are sugar-coated. There's the postprandial glucose mapping, which is the essence of this program, when you can learn to teach people how to do it and to help them to interpret, you're going to get such great results. Postprandial insulin, most not done. Some do fasting insulin, but when we're confused as to whether someone is in a lot of latent adult autoimmune diabetes of adulthood or a straight type 2 or 1, we look at the postprandial insulin. And then antibodies, and we'll go through all of the detail of that in the assessments module. This is a chart, it's on the website, I just thought I'd throw it up here, about how you can use this chart to interpret and expect where somebody is based on this. And you can't just take one and say, oh, their HDL is 30, therefore they must have insulin resistance. No, but you want to look at the other markers as well. If their triglycerides are greater than 90 and their HDLs are less than 65, very high likelihood that they have insulin resistance, even if their fasting blood sugar is a perfect 85. And this is the kind of stuff that you're going to be learning as we go through the modules. You're going to look at how to detect blood sugar imbalances at home. And this is really important that people learn how to measure their waist-hip ratio, measure their waist circumference, do symptom surveys and home glucose monitoring. And you have in the modules, you have symptom surveys that you can use and get scores of their insulin resistance score. You are welcome to use my symptom surveys as they are, or you're welcome to go in and edit them and make them your own. They're in the done for you resources to make it easy for you. Home glucose monitoring, that's the postprandial. We'll go through infinite detail on how to do that. We have a whole page. If you haven't already seen it, it's on the site called glucose testing. We got as this extra bonus the 4 live support calls. This is one of them. There's 3 more. And I'm sorry, I left that thing on there. But this was from, I took this from our presentation last week. But this is one of the calls that you're on. And this is a great benefit because you can get on these calls with me and ask your questions and bring your cases and bring labs that you've done. And your patient can be you or your mother or your sister or a real patient. It's totally up to you. One of the dangerous myths that keep everybody in this situation that I'm addressing in this program and you're going to be a master at is knowing that the glycemic index is not really a useful tool for determining what to eat for glucose control, because those numbers were done as averages of, thousands of people, and in some cases it's very different from person to person. One person might be able to eat bananas and their blood sugar doesn't go up. Another person eats bananas, half a banana, and their blood sugar goes up. So you want to learn how to test this and work with people individually on this. We're going to be looking at home testing, teaching people how to do their fasting, which is what most people do if they do have a meter. But we're going to teach you, we have a whole resource on how to help them choose their blood sugar meter. And we're going to have them do before meal, fasting in the morning, pre-meal, and then regularly throughout that 2 to 6 hour period, actually, especially for those who say that they have that hypoglycemia. So we teach you exactly that in that SUMI assessments and on the glucose page. We've got a couple of videos that show how to get people started testing their glucose and then how to interpret it. Another dangerous myth that I think we really need to bust is that the postprandial glucose, meaning postprandial is always after food, is that the way that a lot of endocrinologists are teaching, as long as your 2 hour postprandial glucose is under 140, you're in good shape. That's a myth. And also that nobody needs to test their blood sugar unless they're diabetic. And that's a myth. And we're going to be dispelling these myths big time. And we're going to see that there's some serious dangers to allowing that postprandial and even the fasting glucose to go as high as most medical doctors allow it to go. So what are the postprandial glucose mapping guidelines? I like to see, and it usually is, their peak between 30 and 60 minutes. Now, some people might peak a little bit sooner than that and then come down. Oftentimes, those people, we're going to suspect that they may have hyperinsulinemia, that they're producing too much insulin and it's causing the spike earlier and coming down more quickly. We might also see that people have a later peak. And there's two phases of insulin production, phase one, phase two. And if the phase one is sluggish or missing, it's not actually peaking early on, which is stimulated by the digestive tract, then they're not going to have that phase one and they're going to have the phase two. And so the glucose gets to go higher and higher and higher and doesn't peak until later. So these are some of the things we'll talk about, and you can bring your cases to the calls, because if there's some, there's bound to be some unusual situations that are not covered in the materials. Ideally, by 2 hours, the person's returned to pre-meal level. Again, if they have that late phase one glucose insulin production, then it's going to take longer. For some, if they eat a lot of fat with their starches, then it might peak later. But it's going to be, you know, ideally, you want to get them to the point of around 2 hours. It's back to approximately the pre-meal level within, you know, give or take 5 or 10%. The peak should be as low as possible, and that's within reason. We don't want their peak to be 65 unless they're on a fast, in which case they're not eating, so it doesn't matter. But the peak, I like to see the peak, you know, 100 or less is ideal. 110 is what we tell people. But when you see some of the studies I'm about to show you, you'll go, oh, I guess I really want my peak to be about 100. But not to the point of getting people obsessive about it, because it increases their stress around it. And they're having really good numbers, but they think because their peak was 108 that there's something wrong. And I don't want you to create stress and anxiety in these folks. And the maximum variation from pre-meal to peak should be 25 or less, ideally. Now, that accounts for people in the high end. So if their fasting blood sugar is, let's just say, 90 or below, then we go for 110 as being their post-meal. The goal is to get them 110 or less as their maximum, their peak. Now, what happens is if somebody has just come off a fast, is doing a keto program, and they eat a meal like, you know, the first meal or a heavier meal after eating very light, and their blood sugar starts in the 50s, it may jump up more than 25 points, but it may only jump up into the 90s. And that's okay, right? We're not, that 25 number I came up with was in looking at people who are starting out as diabetics or insulin resistant folks, where their fasting might be 110 or 120. You can't tell that person, just don't eat anything that raises it above 110. They would be fasting, which isn't a bad thing, but it's definitely not what we want to do. So we use that 25 points. And if they're not able to keep it down to 25 points and they've eliminated everything that is starchy or sugary or whatever, then you just go with them and you support their nutrients. You support them in taking more herbs and foods and nutrients that help to increase the sensitivity. So it's not, you know, the simplistic approach. We're going to teach you all that you need to get through this, and I'm available to ask questions for the weird cases, all right? So when you look at native populations who exercise and eat whole foods, their postprandial glucose rarely goes above 100. So I like to ask people to keep it below 110. And the reason I don't like it to go much above 110 is because studies have shown, and there's a link to that study, and you're going to get these slides. They're also, some of these slides are in other places in the program, that blood sugars over 100 can cause damage. So there's a study that's listed on the slide. Beta cell destruction begins at levels over 100, and that's 5.6 for those of you who are on the Standard International, Canada, or Australia, Europe, et cetera. Every small increase in the 2-hour glucose tolerance test, every small increase corresponded to how much beta cell failure was detectable, and I'll show you in a little bit a slide of that. And the higher the person's blood sugar rose within what they consider the normal range, more beta cells were failing. So I believe that it's in our patients' and clients' best interest to lower that range. So this is a slide I left in. I have a better version of it later on, but I left this one in here because it has the notes from the actual study. And what is the normal blood sugar? Well, down below is a graph of the insulin. And you could see that when you look at the peak of the insulin is really close to the peak of the glucose. And that's true of most foods. There's a few foods that are exceptions, which we'll talk about in that module, in the nutrition module. But if you look at this, at the upper one, that's glucose, right? And then, you know, down at the bottom is the low end, at the top is the high end. What we want to look at is people being somewhere between this low end and this middle end, the middle line. When we, once they go above that, I consider them to be in pre-insulin resistance or insulin resistance. So really looking to target them, and we'll go through all of this in one of the presentations in way more depth. Just wanted to give you an overview. There are some ways to test at home for insulin. We know we test for glucose with a meter, with a continuous glucose meter that you can have a patch on the arm. But insulin is a little more difficult, and I don't know if they still have it. It comes and it goes, but ZRT Labs used to have a blood spot insulin test, and that can make it really easy that the person doesn't have to go to the lab to get it done. It was $35 when I first looked. I went back a year later because somebody in one of our programs said he tried to order it. It was $75, and then I haven't been back since where I've asked somebody on my team to check in with them to see if they have it. And maybe we can get a bulk discount if people want to do that. Hemoglobin A1C is a measure of the amount, the percentage of the red blood cells that are sugar-coated. And sugar-coated red blood cells are not very safe for your person, right? Because think about it when, you know, if you were a kid and your mom ever made molasses, right, or candy like taffy, you heat the molasses and then you pull it out, and it, when it gets cooler, it gets spiky. That's what it does to your red blood cells. And imagine these spiky red blood cells floating around in your bloodstream. They can cause damage to the blood vessel linings. So we really want to keep the hemoglobin A1C about between 4.5 and 5. Below 4.5, you know, it could be hypoglycemia that they're too low. But I just find that ideal is somewhere in the neighborhood of 4.5 to 5. For some, 5.1 to 5.2 works. But that's basically the range that we're looking for. There is a chart within the program that gives you the corresponding relationships between A1C and the average estimated glucose, right? So, oh, and in medicine, you know, to diagnose somebody with diabetes, most people are going to be above 7 when they're first diagnosed. Some of them are above 10 or 11. But here's the thing. Some of your folks whose fasting blood sugar is still not considered in the diabetic or even insulin resistant range by the conventional approach, those guys are actually having problems because their A1Cs, which nobody measures unless you're already diabetic, well, not nobody, but nobody in conventional, but I've had people who their very first A1C was 11. And their fasting glucose wasn't that high. It was in the 90s, which is higher than ideal, but it was not terrible. So there's a lot of people running around with damage to their system, and I'll show you in a couple of slides what can happen when that does happen. So this is basically it, normal glucose response. The glucose you eat, the glucose rises, pancreas secretes insulin, the insulin escorts the glucose into the cells, the blood glucose goes down, the leptin levels rise and trigger, you know, satiation and fat burning in between meals. The pancreas stops secreting insulin. The energy is then, you know, the glucose is converted to ATP, we have energy, and it's hours later before you get hungry and eat again. That's not the way it is when we're in this situation. When they're insulin resistant, they eat and their glucose rises and the pancreas secretes insulin. But the cells have become resistant, either because they're damaged, either because they're not the right nutrients in there, the bad fats got lodged into the membranes, and it's just not able to accept it. So the pancreas secretes even more insulin and even more insulin. And it keeps secreting insulin, but the insulin is ineffective, and eventually it triggers the storage of fat, of the sugar into fat, okay? And then you're hungry pretty quickly thereafter, right? Because you're not getting the cells to nourish themselves. So you've eaten, the stomach feels full, but the person is still hungry. So these are the five areas we are going to go through. There is a module on each of these: consistent movement, balanced nutrition, low stress, restful sleep, and optimal timing and rhythm. And it's super important that you understand from the start that we need to be working on all of these things. We can't just say, well, the person's eating a good diet, why are they having problems? Well, maybe they're not sleeping. Maybe they have a lot of stress. And we have to help people to identify and to correct all of these situations, or they're really not going to get better. So staggering statistics is that in 2011, 18.8 million people in the U.S. were diagnosed with diabetes. That's approximately 8.3%. It is estimated that now that percentage is over 10 or 11%. That's a huge percentage of the population to be diagnosed with the seventh leading cause of death. I have to update this slide is now considered the third. The cost is over $245 billion. And just think of what wonderful things could happen to our planet, to our country, if $245 billion was saved. And a lot of those costs are coming through health insurance or federally funded programs. So we owe it to ourselves from a financial standpoint to prevent the preventable diseases. Insulin resistance, approximately 1.4, that number is up to 86 million people. And the average American consumes 130, the more recent number that I've read was, that says 2012, you can see that there. The more recent numbers I've read were 130. I'm just going to make a note to myself to update statistics because I've got more recent. 32 teaspoons a day that a lot of kids are eating. Can you imagine, why are we saying, oh, they're hyperactive, they're getting juvenile diabetes more often, they're getting skin rashes, asthma, all sorts of stuff as a result of being out of balance. This is really critical stuff. So you're in the right place here to learn how to do this. That's how much that 130 to 150 pounds of sugar, it fills an industrial dumpster. And we need to get people off of that. Now, not everybody's sitting there eating from the sugar bowl, right? It's up to you to do the right history taking to figure out, how do we get these folks to get rid of the processed foods with all the hidden sugars and teach them how to find the hidden sugars. That's about it. 9.5 teaspoons is what the American Heart Association recommends. I'm like, really? You want people to eat 9.5 teaspoons a day? They say no more than, but even up to that, that's way too much sugar because the average person's eating 22 and the kid 32. It's insane. It's insane. So when you look at this, where are the biggest culprits for this? Regular soft drinks. People are drinking Cokes and Pepsis and Dr. Pepper. Dr. Pepper is probably one of the worst. Sugars in the form of candy, cakes, cookies, pies, fruit drinks. Those fruit drinks that are like 5% juice or pure sugar. Dairy desserts, milk, and some of them are just, you know, some from grain products. So these are where those things are coming from, the sugars. So we need to help people to get into normal blood sugar management. And you're going to go through module after module and go deeper and deeper with this so that you understand this and you can speak it off the top of your head. And you're going to be so influential with people when you do. So we involve the pancreas, the liver, the adrenals, all of these things play in. The pancreas produces insulin and glucagon. You'll go into a lot more detail on glucagon and the dance that it does with insulin. And when the sugar gets too high, pancreas secretes insulin. When it gets too low, it secretes glucagon. And there can be a failure of the pancreas to produce the right amounts. It might produce too much. It might produce too little. And then when the excess glucose is taken in, it gets stored in the liver as starch, starch called glycogen, and in the muscles, it's also muscle glycogen. Okay, so, and then it gets stored as fat, whatever's over that. Now, the liver can only really store, I think, a couple thousand calories worth of glycogen, and then anything over that that you don't burn, it gets stored as fat. And so people are getting bigger and bigger, their bellies are getting bigger and bigger, and they're getting less and less energy. So it's all affected by diet, genetics, and lifestyle. And I'm going to share with you some of those factors in more detail. So that was the normal insulin response to glucose. So between meals, we have decreased blood glucose, right? Because we're not eating. And the pancreas secretes glucagon to say, okay, let's keep this regulated. So you know those people that say, oh, no, we can't make people spend longer periods between meals. Well, how is the glucose going to stay steady? Well, the body has a built-in mechanism. The pancreas secretes glucagon. It goes to the liver. It pulls out some of the glycogen, and it keeps the blood sugar steady. And the blood sugar just should remain that way. The glucagon triggers breakdown of fat as well. So all of this stuff allows the blood glucose to rise. But under extreme energy demand or in the state of stress, the glycogen is depleted and cortisol and adrenaline get released. And cortisol goes right for muscle tissue, goes right for protein stores. Adrenaline will go for fat stores, but it's short-lived. Cortisol lingers longer under those stresses. And then we're breaking down muscle. Did you ever notice those people as they get older? They don't weigh any different, but their distribution is different. Instead of having nice solid thighs, they've got the fat around their middle. So the adrenaline triggers lipolysis, some people say, and the cortisol triggers gluconeogenesis, and that breaks down the muscle. And we'll go into more detail of this when you get inside the program. I just wanted to give you this overview of how things work. And the insulin glucagon dance. So we either have high glucose or low glucose. So if the glucose goes low, the pancreas produces the glucagon. You can see it goes to the liver, and then it releases, and now the glucose levels rise. And if that glucose goes high, the pancreas produces insulin, and then it takes up the insulin helps the cells, the fat cells, the liver cells, the muscle cells, to take up the insulin, and the blood sugar goes down. It's a pretty simple process. When it works, we used to think that the brain didn't need insulin, but now we're seeing that the hypothalamus, the cerebellum, the hippocampus, and the cortex all need that insulin. And it plays a significant role in memory. So we're finding that folks who have had longstanding insulin resistance develop Alzheimer's at a much more alarming rate than those who don't. And that is the insulin resistance response. So what causes it? We'll look at each of these in turn, and a lot more so as the program goes on. Well, there are genes that predispose people to it, but that's just a small percentage. We can modify the expression of those genes with the right nutrition, with stress management, with exercise, with sleep, and with timing everything properly. So when we look at genes, can you guys still hear me? My thing just said off snap. Okay. Star 2 if you can still hear me, or type in the chat. Darn it. Okay, still hear me. Good. Phew. We have a whole module. I think it's in the implementation part. Mercury's with me today. Yes. There's a module on the genetics. It's like an hour long, maybe a little longer, on all the genes that are associated. So you can be looking at somebody. But what it's really going to inform you is which people have to be more careful and which people are more like the George Burnses that don't be, have to be as careful. Most people you're going to find in the middle. It's estimated that about 25% have genetics where they have to be super, super careful or they're going to develop insulin resistance and diabetes. There's about, you know, 20-25% at the upper end who, you know, it might, unless they're really, really bad, they're not going to develop it, just don't have the genes for it, and most people are going to lie in between. So we can't let people use the genes as a cop-out. My mom had it. My sister had it. No, they had it because they caused those genes to be expressed. I could easily have diabetes. It runs in my family. Most of my family members are insulin resistant, although they don't know it. I know it. And I have a lot of genes predisposing me. So I have to be a little bit more careful than most people. The nutrition is huge, right? Well, I grew up drinking Kool-Aid and eating Ronzoni pasta and white bread Wonder Bread sandwiches and lots of dairy and burgers on buns. And so inadequate nutrition, loss of specific nutrients, and we're going to go into all the detail in the nutrition module, really extensive detail on this. Stress is super important because it causes the elevation of cortisol, and cortisol causes the blood sugar to go up. Because think about it, there's a hungry tiger chasing me. I need to get glucose into my system fast so I can feed my muscles and get the heck out of there. So stress causes that. And some people, I call it the candy bar eating effect of stress. I've seen it happen to myself. My sugar goes way up because of that. Lack of exercise. Trained muscles will pull the glucose out of the system much more effectively than non-trained muscles. And we're going to teach you all about the different kinds of exercise that you can teach people. And you'll have the understanding of the physiology behind it. And then poor sleep. When I discovered that I had insulin or pre-insulin resistance, I was like, why? I eat well. I exercise. I don't stress out. And it really was my sleep. And I started really researching it in depth, and there's tons and tons of studies that show even one night of bad sleep in an otherwise healthy person will create a temporary insulin resistance the next day. So what about your folks who aren't? What about your folks who, you know, they just aren't sleeping at all? They've had insomnia for years. They have anxiety. They have all sorts of adrenal, you know, the hyperadrenal, the tired and wired. Folks are going to have insulin resistance, and your job is to help inform them. Angelica says it's crazy how many people dwell on their genes when faced with an opportunity to change their lifestyle and take control. Absolutely well said, because it's control we have. We can't control our genes, what ones we were given, but we can control the expression of those genes. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And there's going to be times when you have bad sleep. And the way I look at it is you teach your people that when they have bad nights of sleep, to be super ultra careful the next day, maybe not to have that pineapple. You know, as good food as pineapple is, it might shoot their sugar up after they haven't had sleep. So, and I'm talking after the reset. All right. So the next one, why isn't it moving? There we go. So let's just look at genetics. Right? By the age of 60, 40% of Americans have at least three markers, and 60 to 70% have at least one. And the genetics, you know, I would say plays a role, but it's really about, in most estimates, 5 to 10% at the most, right? And we can control the expression. Omega-3 deficiency, especially DHA, docosahexaenoic acid, which is one of the, I call them the craving crusher nutrients that we recommend people get on from the beginning. Most people don't get enough of it. Most people's diets, even if they do get enough omega-3s, the short chain, like from flax and hemp and chia, walnuts, things like that, they're not getting enough DHA because those pathways are blocked in converting them. And we have a whole section in there where we teach you about that. So DHA is super important. EPA is too, but DHA. There's some nutrient deficiencies specifically that we know about: chromium, magnesium, zinc, B vitamins, and maybe boron and lithium, okay, that in addition to the DHA. So we're looking at people and seeing, do they have signs of these? We're giving you in the program some nutrient assessment kinds of questionnaires that you can go and do, or you can do, like, you know, a NutriVal or a SpectraCell or other things. But you can often tell just by asking questions and looking at their diet what they're going to be deficient in, and just let's start there. Lack of resistance, exercise, manual labor, and trained muscle mass. Like in the olden days, we did exercise. We're out in the fields throwing stuff, carrying stuff. And now we have to go to the gym to work out or get exercise bands and work at home. That's one of the causes of insulin resistance. Also, all the sugar and the processed foods and soft drinks and juices. I'm always shocked when I ride on a plane, right, and I'm saying, they say, what do you want to drink? And I say, I'll have some water, no ice, please. And the person next to me says, I'll have a gin and tonic. And the next one says, I'll have a Coke. Oh, my God, they're just drinking it like crazy, and most people are. And then they come around with the snacks, and it's usually some sort of junk, pretzels or chips or whatever, and everybody takes them. I'm like, no thanks. And people say, oh, can I have yours? This is what people are doing. No wonder it's a sick society. The stress, like the managing, you know, 15,000 different things, that high stress via the hypercortisolemia, excess cortisol in the blood, will trigger the breakdown of stored glucose and elevate the glucose. And over time, it creates a problem. My slides are appearing ahead of what I'm saying. That's kind of weird. It must be, huh. Oh, Lynn says, I take the snacks to throw away so no one else will eat them. That's good. Okay, so maybe there is some delay on your internet. So now we're talking about protein. And most people get enough protein, but there are some people who don't. But many people don't absorb it. So when we have somebody who's showing signs of lack of protein, this can contribute to insulin resistance. And we want to make sure we figure out, is it deficient protein or is it malabsorption of that protein, right? So we've talked about this before. If you've heard me speak on this, the early signs and symptoms, the belly fat, the low energy, feeling tired and after a meal, even though you've eaten plenty, that's because the sugar is not getting into the bloodstream. Hungry, even after eating a full meal, same thing. The sugar is not getting into the bloodstream. That mid-afternoon energy slump, usually it's high and then low, and then you have that low in the middle of the afternoon. Could be adrenally related as well. That difficulty focusing. So many kids that are put on ADD medications, Ritalin and other stimulants, they really just need to get their blood sugar balanced. Nobody's looking at that. Nobody's looking at testing these things in kids. And I think that it should be a routine part of everybody's testing at least a couple of times, you know, throughout their childhood, is to get the insulin to see if they're overproducing and to get the hemoglobin A1C tested in addition to fasting glucose. And we could prevent so many kids from being put on a needless medication. And then that cranky and irritable if you miss a meal. If you're 2 months old, yeah, you're going to cry in between meals, but we shouldn't get that way because that, remember, that glucagon and insulin should be working properly. But these, remember, why we want to detect some of these things, because they're the tip of the iceberg symptoms, you know? So we want to look at early detection, which would be the home glucose monitoring, A1C, stealth lab analysis techniques, which we'll talk more about. Waist to hip ratio are equal to 0.8 in a female or 1 in a male. So that waist hip ratio, we should not see the belly being bigger than the waist, than the hips, even in a man. I mean, 1 is on the verge. 0.8 in a woman is definitely on the verge, and it's saying that we're storing too much visceral fat. And then, of course, we'll have a symptom survey that you can look at. Martha says, I take my seaweed snacks hoping someone will ask. Martha, I did that and someone did. I was sitting in the airport waiting for the plane. I hadn't eaten lunch. I had gone and gotten a green juice and I threw some chia seeds in it to slow down its absorption. And then I had some seaweed snacks and I'm eating them and somebody looked at me and said, what is that? He explained. She goes, wow, are they good? I'm like, here, try one. And she just goes, wow, those are really good. I think I'll get some. And then across from me, there was another lady who saw me. She goes, are those seaweed sacks? Where'd you get them? I said, oh, I didn't get them here at the airport. I got them at Whole Foods. She goes, darn. I said, here, have some. And it was exciting to be at the airport and educate people about that. Love it. Yeah, so this is that picture again, a little bit larger. I just wanted the verbiage to be stuck on there before. But basically, if you look here, you really want to have them be between this low curve and then the medium curve, right? And really keeping them really nice and level like this. And we'll talk more about that. This is another one. This is a response after, this is like a glucose tolerance test, a 5-hour one, response after 100 grams of glucose. You could see that the people who, they started out, you know, depending, the mild diabetics, obviously, and severe diabetics started out with higher glucose levels, but the normal minimum and max, they started out pretty much the same, you know, below 100, and then they went high, and then some of them didn't. Now, these are people who had not been diagnosed by conventional medical standards as being insulin resistant, okay? So that's why they started the same, but here's where the beauty of what we do is. They didn't say, oh yeah, these people at the max have pre-insulin resistance. No, but they do if it went above 150. Look how nice and steady that one. That 1 minute one, they barely go above 100. It goes to maybe 110 and then down again. And that's what we're targeting for. That's where the healthier version is. And that's what this whole program is going to help you to teach people to do and take them through the metabolic reset. There's hemoglobin A1C. There's ways to calculate your average glucose. I gave you a link. It's on the program site as well. And that basically will tell us that, you know, say you put in an A1C is 7.1, you put that into that calculator and you're going to find that their average glucose at 7.1 is probably 140-ish, something like that. 5.6 is the cutoff for insulin resistance in the medical, you know, the standard way they do it. But when you look up 5.6, it actually means their average glucose is around 118, 119. Now that's the average. That means that while they were sleeping, it was lower, and sometimes it's going way higher to be able to come up with that average. So that's scary. Even the 118 shouldn't be where their peak is. I said that before. So what happens when somebody has insulin resistance and it keeps going? Well, there's prolonged inhibition of fat burning because the body cannot burn fat while insulin is in their bloodstream. And these folks that say eat every 2 hours to maintain steady blood sugar are not looking at the long-term game. Insulin, high insulin, causes the inhibition of fat burning. And if it occasionally goes up, it's not going to be a big deal. But if every day people are going around with insulin in their bloodstream, bad. Contributes to excess belly fat because they can't burn it. And then the fat gets stored around the organs, and that's the worst kind of fat. Causes a decrease in their lean muscle mass, damages the blood vessel lining. So insulin itself, when it's elevated, has a bunch of damage, and we have a lot of information in that as you go through the modules. But insulin itself will damage the blood vessel linings, which means that it makes them more prone to cardiovascular incidents. Causes systemic inflammation, elevations of C-reactive protein, can lead to high blood pressure and thicker blood, basically because, right, it's all sugar-coated, retention of water, and it can initiate cancer. We have a lot of connection between insulin resistance and cancer. So there's some of the serious ones. There's some lab test results again. The five keys, I like to increase their sensitivity, decrease their insulin need, and these are important. Can't just take supplements to increase the sensitivity and keep feeding somebody orange juice and bread. It's going to they're still going to need that insulin. You're going to get elevations and you're going to get all those complications. And reduce inflammation. We got to do that. And we do that with the balance of omega-3s and the nutrients, et cetera. We want to optimize their fat burning and need muscle building. That's with the exercises, the burst exercising, optimizing growth hormone by spacing the meal and getting to sleep early enough. And then minimizing the impact of the candy bar eating effects of stress. That's pretty critical, guys. And I've seen it happen myself where I get real upset and I go, oh, I wonder what happened to my glucose. And it was up, definitely. So it's very important that you're teaching people and you're going to learn a systemic approach to the five lifestyle areas, nutrition, stress, exercise, sleep, and timing. There's a module for each of those, and then there's a bunch of other modules to help you. This is the hormone imbalances that have been studied related to insulin resistance. insulin, leptin, thyroid, cortisol, and growth hormone. They're very intimately tied, and we'll talk more about that in the modules. So how are you going to help people reverse? In a nutshell, this is just a nutshell, you're going to help them avoid the trans fats, right, those hydrogenated fats, fats that are polyunsaturated that have been heated above 118 degrees, damage the fats, cause oxidative problems, and cause an increase in insulin resistance. We're going to help them to increase their DHA and decrease their omega-6 to 3 ratio. I've given you some really good charts in the book, in the on the site that you can use to help calculate this, improve their mineral balance, especially chromium, magnesium, and zinc. So you're going to look and see how, where are people at, and do they need these nutrients, and then help them to get on the right doses. Improve their B vitamins, increase exercise and manual labor, burst training. We're going to have them avoid those high glycemic processed foods that create increase in blood sugar. And they're going to have them create their own glycemic index, not just go by this glycemic index that's posted, which isn't very accurate for each individual, but they're going to create their own high glycemic index. We're going to help them to get enough protein and help them to absorb their protein. So all of this is contained within. Here's some rules that you're going to get them through slowly but surely. Don't eat after dinner. Only eat three meals a day. Some people do better with two. Allow 4 to 6 hours between the meals. Eat till full, but don't overeat or undereat. If you undereat, if they undereat, they're going to be hungry a couple of hours later and start the process over again. We're going to teach them how to eat slowly and calmly. We're going to teach them how to practice breathing and appreciation before each meal. We're going to teach them how to eat a breakfast containing protein if they do protein. And some people are going to want to do intermittent fasting. And some people do better with intermittent fasting where they have a breakfast and then their main meal in the afternoon and then no dinner. And some people feel better when they do intermittent fasting where they skip breakfast. So it's not cast in concrete, but I will say that most people that you're going to see coming in with the fatigue and all these symptoms are likely to do better at the start to make sure they have some good protein breakfast. And we have a really good chart in the Sweet Spot program, which you have access to. Now, it's actually a booklet that teaches you how to teach them how to eat a hormone-balanced breakfast to help keep these sugars well. And just so you know, you have the 250-page booklet from the Insulin Resistance Consumer Program, and you get to go through that program yourself or take a client through it. So the most important nutrients that I've found, chromium polynicotinate. People are going to ask you about picolinate. Sounds very similar, doesn't it, right? High doses of picolinate have been found to contribute to some liver sluggishness. So I have them get the polynicotinate, which is a niacin-bound version of it, and it helps. It's one what most of the studies. Now, dosage-wise, it's going to vary from person to person. On average, the average, you know, person that's maybe a little overweight, 400 micrograms twice a day. Somebody that's thinner might need less. Somebody that's been diabetic or pre-diabetic for a long time may need more. So it's approximate. Now, here's the thing. Like 400 micrograms twice a day, you can have them do 200 micrograms four times a day, one with each meal and one at bedtime. Or sometimes they're going to say, well, the only brand I could get has it for 600 micrograms. And so you can be creative. If they're very thin, you can just say 600 micrograms a day is good. Take it at bedtime. If they're more on the diabetic range, and they've been that way for a while, just have them take two a day. And if not, if neither of those, if they're just kind of average, you might suggest that maybe they take one, and then every other day they take two and try to balance it out. So it's on average 800 micrograms a day. We're going to look at magnesium. We have a magnesium loading document. Citrate, glycinate, or natural calm, which is really citrate. There's also taurate. That works well as well. Be careful with the citrate for people who have irritable bowel because it could cause them to have loose stools. And the magnesium is super important for helping the insulin get into the system. And excess insulin actually robs the body of magnesium, so it creates this vicious cycle. The DHA, I usually go with 350 to 500 milligrams a day, preferably algae oil-based. In my perspective. I don't like the fish oil base because I just want to make sure that they are not contaminated. But if it's a good fish oil base that you trust, you can certainly use it. I mean, there's an omega-3 and 6 documents. Zinc, you know, it's going to vary from person to person, anywhere from 30 to 60 milligrams today, although there are times when I've had people go to 90 or even higher when they have some issues with social anxiety, you know, perhaps they have an issue with their other hormones. Maybe they have in the sex steroid hormones, they may have a 5-alpha reductase excess or an aromatase excess, in which case higher doses of zinc might be needed. And then B vitamins. I always prefer liquids if you can get it. So I would absolutely, I'd absolutely be looking at liquid forms if you can get them. What about magnesium? Magnesium is when high levels of insulin causes a higher level of excretion of magnesium in the blood, in the urine. So we really have to replenish that. And some people it might be 300, you know, but you can also do a magnesium load process with them to see. And some people do higher levels of omegas. Absolutely. If you've got a family history of heart disease, if you've had an advanced lipid panel, if you have any kind of heart stuff in your issue or cardiovascular, higher levels are fine as well. You're just looking for the minimum. Some other nutrients, we go through this in extensive detail in the nutrient module, but I just wanted to give you some summary stuff to start with. The vitamin C, 1,000 milligrams three times a day seems to be a good level, but you can also have them do a vitamin C calibration. Vitamin D, it could be anywhere from 1,000 IUs to 20,000. You're going, huh? Test them and see. And you might have to test them, supplement, and maybe increase it. I've had folks had to just stay on 10 to 12,000 even for years just because they had some genetic SNPs and they were deficient for a long time. B vitamins, I've given you some of that. There's a document in the program that gives you all the vitamins and minerals and the doses. This doesn't mean that everybody needs to take these, but these are things to look for to make sure that they don't have deficiencies of. B6, pantothenic acid, these are all, a lot of these are related to the adrenals, which are very intimately tied with the blood sugar. I find that for folks that go on a lower glycemic diet where they take out the foods that are higher, like potatoes and bananas, which are high in potassium, that sometimes they start to get leg cramps. And at first we were like, why are they getting leg cramps? They're taking all that magnesium. Well, it turns out they didn't have enough potassium because they'd gotten rid of most of their dietary sources. So all of those symptoms, like I said, tip of the iceberg, and that's it for my presentation. Oh yeah, so we have open for questions. I'm going to skip this for a second. I'm going to do the last couple of slides just to remind you of what your bonuses are and how to get access. And then what I'm going to have to do is close down, reboot, and come back to see if I can get my sound back, because this happens periodically. I mean, like I said, we had a storm earlier. So, but I'll leave it open. So Lynn Rose, Angelica, any of you that are on that might be able to answer some people's, Martha, answer some of the people's questions while I get back in. So before I go to questions, I'm going to just remind you that, hey, taking a good history is super ultra important, and having good tools in your toolbox, which is what this program is all about. So you've made a good decision to be here. Why is this here? At this point, there's all kinds of effects of blood sugar impacts on the thyroid gland. Whoops. Anyway, those slides were from a previous presentation. I don't know how they got in there. There's your insulin resistance. These are some of the complications that happen from excess insulin and increasing narrowing of the vessels and increasing the likelihood of plaque and also thickening of the lining of the vessels. Learn how to teach them to test their glucose. We have plenty of important pieces in there. So what we're going to teach you how to do is a four-phase insulin resistance reversal plan. You're going to start by educating them and getting them on some supplements and testing their foods to see what foods cause them to go high. Once they've got a clear idea, then you put them on a 30-day metabolic reset. And you keep them off the foods that raise the blood sugar either above 110, or if they're already diabetic insulin resistant, no more than 25 points. You're going to do that for a month while you're having them do the exercise and the sleep and really working on fine-tuning all of those. And then you're going to go into a transition period. Some of the folks are going to go longer. Some of our folks in our Sweet Spot program, the transition period just ended, and they are actually saying, I'm just going to go longer because I just need to go longer. And some people go longer, depending on the genetics, depending on the previous history. Go into a transition and then find your maintenance. Find the maintenance. What foods do you have to stay away from forever? I mean, everybody should stay away from the bad stuff, right? So these are the, so this is some of the details of the nutrition. I already gave you those doses. And phasing out the high glycemic foods is going to be part of that first part. In the movement, I teach about burst training. You've got a lot of information on the modules, the fitness module, and you're going to have a lot of information about how it affects growth hormone and different ways that they could do it. And then there's the stress, and we teach you extensively about heart math. We are having a bonus call for the Sweet Spot folks on Wednesday, and we can make sure, Lynn, if you can make a note, Lynn or Angelica, make a note that we can get information for folks to make sure that they get access to that call, because it's going to be a nice call about tapping. So tapping, yoga, meditation, I teach heart math and get a lot of stuff in there. You get a 30-day metabolic, 30-day stress reduction system. The sleep, there's a lot of resources in sleep. And a lot of people are going to say, well, I've tried everything. Oh, yes, I've tried that. Oh, I've tried that. But they haven't tried the right combination, perhaps. And sometimes the lack of sleep has to do with some old past traumas in their emotional body, and they're waking up in the middle of the night because they don't feel safe being asleep. So sleep is super, super important to teach people. I've been working with one of my colleagues does something called Brain Time, and Brain Time is actually a really cool setup where he's got these special sounds you're listening to, and it helps people to sleep. And we've had a number of people, some of our practitioners and some of our students in the Sweet Spot, who have started the Brain Time and gotten their first good night's sleep in years. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? Cool. Yeah. RNA has liquid mag. Okay, so people are talking about different stuff. And Martha says Brain Time has helped her to sleep better. Yeah, we've heard that from quite a number. The timing is the piece that most people are overlooking. You know, there's a lot of talk these days about intermittent fasting. I have an 18-page paper on intermittent fasting in the timing module. Wrote it, how many years ago, back in 2011, so a long time ago. I'm going to be doing a talk on Wednesday night on intermittent fasting because it's gotten to be so popular, and I want to make sure people are doing it right with the right ideas. Some people are doing intermittent fasting where it's like, you know, just skip meals and eat whatever the heck you want at the other meals, or fast for 24 hours and then feast on crap. And we got to make sure people aren't listening to that kind of bad advice. So eat and fast, eat and fast, eat and fast. Lots of different ways that you can do intermittent fasting. And you guys have decided to come here and be different and swim in the direction that's not the same as the rest of the pack. And I admire you for doing that. And I want to just share that as a part of this program, you're getting pieces to help you with your own self-nurturing, where you're going to get access to, if you haven't already, the Sweet Spot program that you can do for yourself, and a lot of our other resources that help you and support you. All the program is all geared towards clinical mastery, except that last module is on marketing and success and taking a presentation out into your community so you can build your practice. So we're putting all of this together in this one place. And these are the modules, the foundations, the assessments, the optimizing nutrition, stress management, fitness factor, power of sleep, timing is everything. Then we have, how do you put this together? How do you actually put together a 30-day metabolic reset, and then the education and marketing. How do you get out in your community and build your following from this? So we offered you some bonuses. People always ask, when am I going to get my bonuses? The Shine tickets you should have already been offered, and you can easily, you're going to be getting a bunch of emails until you sign up, and then we'll stop. That reminds you that you do have two free tickets. You can share one with a colleague. You can go and sign up your own ticket and then give the link to somebody else and you can bring a colleague with you. And it's an amazing conference this year. It happens to be related to this program. It's the role of intermittent fasting, nutrients, and plant-centered ketogenic diets in the management of metabolic imbalances. It's going to be amazing. We have some amazing speakers, so join us. You also get your free spot in the Sweet Spot program. If you've done Sweet Spot already and you want to share that program with somebody else, you can actually sell it to a client, give it to a client, give it to a family member. You just have to get in touch with us and give us the name of that person that's going to take it. And then you can guide them through it so you can practice what you're learning. The other one is the blood sugar balancing presentation in a box, which we put in that last module on marketing and education. So that's where these are. These you've already got access to. And then the vault, the archives, that should be already up there under recordings. So when you go into the site, there is a drop-down menu that says recordings and calls, and you should be able to find it there. Now, some of the other bonuses that we gave you to help even go deeper with the self-nurturing, clinical mastery, and authentic business and marketing was a thyroid balancing step-by-step. We will, as soon as we close registration, which should be tonight, by middle to the end of the week, we have a page, we'll make sure you have access to it, that will contain the extra bonuses. The thyroid is invaluable for helping you to work with people who also have thyroid issues. We also have a, that one some of you got. I don't know why I didn't take that out, but some of you got this authentic business. Some of the first 20 got that. What happened to my other slides? Okay. There's also, in addition to the thyroid, let me go back to that. In addition to the thyroid, there's something called the Adrenal Restoration Collection, and there's a bunch of different resources that I put together on adaptogenic herbs and reading the saliva test so you understand how the adrenals are working, and that's included as a bonus as well. And then the third bonus is a gut assessment and balancing. So we're basically giving you a little bit of extra work. We're giving you the blood sugar balancing, but also giving you some extra steps in the direction of what I see as our four key pillar hormone imbalances, which would be blood sugar, gut, adrenal and thyroid. So you're getting a little bit to get you going in that direction to help work with people with that. And that's basically that. So, really dig in and learn how to do this. How do we know if you were one of the first 20? We will send you an email. So we've marked the first 20 as they've come in, and we will send that to you by the end of the week. We'll let you know how to get that. And then we're going to get it scheduled. Okay? Lynn Rose is leaving to go. Great. Thanks for being here. Brain time. Brain time is not all. It's not mine. It's somebody else's. So if that's something that you want to learn about, it's drritamarie.com/braintime, and that will get you a link to his program. And if that's something you want to do, you would do it. It's like a membership thing. You pay like, I don't know, $20 a month or something like that. And phenomenal stuff if you have sleep problems or if you have like a post-concussion syndrome, it's also good for that. So here's what we're going to do. If you have questions, you're going to raise your hand. And what Lynn is going to do is Lynn is going to help you to get some of those questions answered or just have a discussion with you in the next 15 minutes while I need to stop. Not 15 minutes, it shouldn't take me more than 5, reboot my computer, and then I should get my sound back. Something happened with either the storm or Mercury retrograde or whatever where the speaker is not working right now. So I'm just going to go get out. Lynn, are you okay with doing, I can't hear you, so just type it in the chat. You're okay with doing that? Yes? And if you have questions, raise your hand. Yeah. Yes. Okay, good. So I'm going to get out right now. I'm going to close down. I'll take down the slides. And I'm just going to get out. I'll come right back. I should be good. So I'm going to go like that. And so like this.
Okay, I've opened my line, so it should be okay.
Start my computer. I'll be back in a few.
All right. So can you guys say, can you hear me? If you can hear me, type it in the chat. Want to make sure. Yes, but robotic sounding. Well, that would probably be my internet. I live along the Minnesota border. Maybe I will try doing it again myself. Oh, okay. So, Angela, can you hear me normally? Barbara, do you, Christina, do you guys hear me normally? Or is it more of a Dalek sound? Okay, great. Then I will stay here. Cool. Yeah, well, maybe you, do you have Iowa internet too, Patty? That's always my reasoning. I live in the country along the Minnesota-Iowa border. And so how's everybody liking what they've heard so far on this kickoff call? Are you pleased? Are you excited for more? Let me know what you, yeah. Yeah, great, Angelica. I always have questions. I've been doing this for many years. You can hear, yeah, the occasional distortion is my internet. It goes in that reverb. Okay. Yeah, I don't think that would change. Yeah, this postprandial mapping and everything that goes along with it is so important. I have a grandson that's on the autism spectrum. He just turned 11, and for the last year, I've been telling my daughter, his mother, that we really need to get him to start checking his blood sugar because he's starting to get a little of that chunky blood sugar kind of floating around him. Post concussion. Oh, that was Brain Time Dawn. And I put a link in the schedule, the chat here a little bit earlier. With a link to the Brain Time. And it's a link that we got for Dr. Rita Marie. So they would hear that.
The moderator has left the conference.
Hello, but it's not playing.
I hear you.
Looks like I'm connected. I don't know that you guys are hearing me, but I don't know if I'm going to hear you. I'm going to try putting a headset in. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's actually a bummer on my computer. Otherwise, I'm going to have to call in. I know I'll call in on the phone. Where's my phone? You guys hearing me? I think the only way I'm going to hear you is on the phone. Raise your hand, star 2, if you're hearing me. Star 2, if you're hearing me. Yes? No? Type in the chat if you're hearing me. Yes, you can hear me. Okay, thank you. I'm going to call in on my phone because I'm going to open Lynn's line and see if I can hear her, but Lynn, can you speak? Let me know if you're hearing me.
I can. Can you hear me?
Something screwy.
Can you hear me?
Mercury is definitely retrograded because this is crazy. Usually when I reboot, it comes back. So I'm going to call in. Let me just find the call out. Okay, I'm going to call in on my phone. And I'll have to shut off my mic on the computer, otherwise you'll hear me twice. Or else I'll mute my phone, whichever sounds better. Call in.
Can you hear me?
For help with host options, press star 0. You will now be connected with the conference.
All right. All right, tell me if you're hearing me. Nope. I gotta go the other. Lynn, go ahead and speak.
Yeah, you're an echo.
Okay, but I hear you. So I have to figure out how to do this.
Do you have something on your end that you can close down?
Okay, what's that beeping?
All right, can everybody hear me?
I can hear you, Lynn.
Okay, great.
All right, well, let's see if we can answer some questions. I'm sorry about this. It's very bizarre, so I'm listening on my – I'm doing it on my cell phone. Okay, so who would like to tell me why you're here? Who would like to ask a question? I apologize for the crazy symptoms of tonight. Usually once I reboot, I get my mic back, so I don't know what happened tonight. Who has questions? Star 2 raises your hand, and then I can also go through the chat and see what other questions.
Can you do, in reviewing the chat, can you explain how sweet spot fits in with this? Because I know many people are wanting to go through sweet spot as well.
Sure. Well, sweet spot is the program that takes you through this process as the client. So you can go ahead and sign up for sweet spot. You get access to it right away. And I think you get an email that says click here if you want to get started. As you're learning how to do this with your clients, you're actually doing it on yourself. The other option is if you've already done it, if you don't have issues for yourself, you can actually sign one of your people up for the sweet spot. And you can take them through the sweet spot. So they'll go through and you can actually be practicing what you're learning as they go. Does that help?
Yeah, I think that's what they need to hear is how, because some people were feeling overwhelmed having to do the sweet spot and this. And as you said, each of the different modules in IRSPT actually refers to the sweet spot module. So they work together.
What I would do, since you're in IRSPT, it's start here, and then when you get to a module that says, hey, go check out the corresponding module in Sweet Spot, you can go there. Yeah, so that's what I would recommend.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's not really very consuming to try to do both, because you're basically putting into action what's there. So a lot of the content in Sweet Spot you wouldn't have to actually go through, because you're getting that same content in more depth in Insulin Resistance. We give you access so that you can take yourself through it before you go through the Insulin Resistance program, or you can take one of your clients or family members or whatever through it. Awesome.
The other piece that I would just recommend for people is, as you look at your schedule, your calendar, block off times and days that you will be studying this, that you'll be taking time to go over this.
Yep, absolutely. Good idea. Absolutely. I see a question from Angelica. Says, I'm fascinated by the optimal ranges we'll be exploring. Can you share more about why these ranges are not widely known or shared? They are widely known in the functional medicine circle. So people who study functional medicine are taught these more ideal ranges. The reason it's like true of all labs, so whether it's the glucose or whether it's white blood cells, whatever, the ranges, but the way that the labs usually calculate them is based on 95% of the population fits in this range, and if you're either side of the opposite, you're out of it. Well, that doesn't identify health. And so the way that the optimal ranges were identified is take people who are in good health, take people who are optimally healthy, or look at the science behind what happens when a certain marker goes up and what it does to the body, and then we came up with these. I didn't make these ranges up. They actually come from lots of different places. Some of them are slightly different than others, but there's a lot of different places where you can get access to them. So does that answer it? Let's see. Janine says, it's good to get a meter to test your blood sugar because a lot of people are afraid of it. Yes, absolutely. You all should be testing your own blood sugar, because that's going to help you to be able to help them. I can't tell you how many times I've been on a phone call or a Zoom call where I've actually had them take it out of the box and put the little needle in there and actually do it. And when we first did the insulin resistance practitioner training, we basically had everybody doing that and testing their own sugars, and it was just amazing. What's the 6 months? Yeah, so some people get through it in 6 weeks. If you just go peep right through the stuff, if you're familiar with it somewhat before, people who come from Sweet Spot and then do this have a lot of knowledge. They're just going deeper with ways to explain it and more of the science behind it, so they can go through it quicker. If you're not employed and you don't have kids, you can go through it a lot quicker. But, you know, 6 months would be a good amount of time. 3 months is really when I created it, it was intended for. But some people take longer. Okay. Let's see if there's any hands up. Kiki. Hi, Kiki.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Glad to hear that.
Yeah, can you hear me, Vicky? Yeah, thank you. I'm not hearing you so clear. I was just wondering to ask you, because you mentioned somewhere earlier tonight about a situation where someone might have a high A1C, yet their fasting blood sugars might be perfectly fine. And I was just wondering how such a situation could happen.
Yeah, so their postprandials are going super high. And that's what happens a lot, because fasting blood sugar is just not a good indication of what's happening postprandial. So let's say this person's fasting, like in the person I was thinking about, it was fine, but not by our standards. It was fine by medical standards. It was like, I don't know, a 95 or something. But nobody was telling them how to test after meals. And apparently he was going super high after meals, so that it skewed the average, so that his A1C was like 10 or 11. So it happens,
so
especially on the low.
In essence,
on the high end.
So then, in essence, what are we measuring then with the fasting blood sugar? What is the fasting blood sugar indicating of? If the prostaglandin is like more important, what is?
It's not very useful. We need to keep it low enough, but it doesn't raise quickly enough to give us good information that the person's heading down this path. So somebody could have a glucose of 98, which is too high. By our standards, it's too high because above 90 start to get into four times the risk of cardiovascular disease. But even so, if they're perfectly fine, like I was perfectly fine, yet my prandials were going into the 160s and 180s. On perfectly good, healthy food. It was just not the right food for me. My A1C was 5.7 when I started out, which is a little bit on the high side. But my fasting was perfect. It was 85. Happens all the time. That's why this stuff is so important.
Mm-hmm. So then is it important for clients to do the fasting blood sugar?
Yeah, because we want to see how high it's going. And yes, because fasting blood sugar as it goes up, it's very important. Now, on a blood test, if they've got their own meter, they don't want to spend the extra money to pay for it. I, you know, totally support that.
No, if they have an issue with the pricking, they have an issue with the frequent pricking, so then maybe to skip, is it okay to skip the fasting and then just do before eating and after?
Well, I guess you could skip the first morning fasting as long as they're doing it right before a meal.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to skip it entirely. You know, maybe you can go down to testing it once a week to see if it's getting better.
Mm-hmm. I hear.
Okay.
Okay, and then one more question you mentioned about tonight was interesting because I haven't heard you saying this before, that sometimes you might be consuming enough omega-3, let's say, from flax or whatever it is, but you're not converting it. What were you referring to by that?
So if you go to the module, that's the nutrition module, there's a whole section in there on omega-3s. The flax, the chia, the hemp, the walnuts, they have linoleic acid, and that linoleic gets converted downstream into DHA and EPA. But they have to have the right nutrition in place, B vitamins, vitamin C, biotin, magnesium, copper, there's a bunch of things. And if they don't have enough of those nutrients in place, they're not going to convert it efficiently. So they may have plenty of omega-3s in their diet from those sources, but not making it into EPA and DHA, which is why it's important to look at that. And that's why we usually have people take the DHA at the beginning of the program, at least when they're starting out.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Who else? Questions or comments? I always will call it a night. And what I'd love to do, if anybody is interested, is to arrange a time when, if you're confused about the website, if you want to have, you know, go through that, we can always do another call to go through that. You know, it went a little longer tonight than I expected. Awesome. All right.
There's a question on the chat that might be helpful to people for themselves as well as their clients. Mary says with the sweet spot and the 30-day metabolic reset, she herself has been afraid to do it like years because she will lose weight and she has osteoporosis. As well as has a fear of becoming too hungry and having the hypoglycemia.
Okay.
So
can you hear me?
I know that. Okay. Yep. Now I can.
Yeah. So people who are thin, that's a really good question because there are a lot of people like that. And we really need to break a rule. And the rule is making them wait too long between meals. All right. So when they need to be eating more calories, some people are going to have very high metabolic rates and need more, and it's more than they can eat at comfortably at a meal. And some folks actually can't eat very much, and they think they're eating a lot, but they get full real easily. So in those cases where I've had that happen, I've had people have 4 or 5 meals a day instead of just keeping it to the 3, but making those meals within, they have to test and they have to be the meals that don't raise their glucose. And I've had people gain, people who wanted to gain 10 pounds by doing that, by making sure that they got enough calories. So you do have to eat enough calories. If you're working with someone who is thin or you are thin and you don't want to lose weight, I would say getting on a program like the Chronometer or fitday.com or MyFitnessPal or something where you can track it, because sometimes you're eating a lot less than you think. You think you're eating enough calories, but you're not. That makes sense?
Yep.
Okay. Anybody else? Oh, I gotta make sure my battery doesn't die from the 6-3.
I think that was really one question that I wanted to make.
Try this. Okay, I don't see any others. Join the Facebook group, the IME Facebook group. That's going to be helpful. And we'll likely do another kickoff call after this, because I see that a whole bunch of people joined and they may not have gotten, they just joined tonight. And they may not have gotten the notice in time. I see people are coming in, yeah. So we'll make sure that.
Yeah, I know. I had passed the information along to a few people who just joined from your call this afternoon.
Right away, but it may not, the timing of that last reminder might have been after some of these folks got in. But that's okay. We can do another call, probably on Zoom, so that we can see each other and we can get to know each other, and we can just, have everybody introduce themselves. Because it really helps in going through a program with other people to get to know those folks. So we'll look to see if we can find a time for that. Let's see. The Freestyle Libre, yeah, you got to get a prescription from your doctor for that. But it is still worth it. Actually, someone was saying it costs her less to do the Freestyle Libre than it does to do the finger pricks, because she was doing so many. And at least it's good for a month, when they're doing the metabolic, or right before the metabolic reset and during it, if they can swing the price and they can get somebody to order it for them. It's really, really good. I love mine.
Yeah. Debbie says, is there someone through the program that I can talk one-on-one about this course and using it in my practice?
What does that mean, Debbie? What do you want to talk about in particular? So you want to talk to another student, or you want to talk to somebody who's already doing it in their practice, or you want to talk to one of our team members? I'm not sure. What do you want to know about using it in your practice? Because, if you want to learn how others are using it in their practice, we can hook you up to some folks who are. Okay, let me see if there's any other hands up. No, I don't see any other hands up. Let me see if there's anything in the Q&A. Okay, this is a great question, Angelica. Does overeating protein cause high blood sugar? Yes, it can, because there are certain kinds of amino acids called branched chain amino acids, leucine, isoleucine, and valine, that can get converted to glucose. And so if you eat too much protein, some of those can, more protein than you need, some of those can be converted. And that's a problem that a lot of folks get into when they're trying to do a ketogenic diet, or they're doing a paleo diet and they're just eating too much protein, and they don't understand why they're not getting into ketosis, they're just raising their blood glucose. So great question. Really good question. Lynn, can you, I don't know if she's having trouble because of my connection. She said, Mary said she had trouble hearing my reply, because you summarized her to eat enough calories and make more frequent meals without eating blood sugar raising foods. That's absolutely right, Mary. And also, what was I going to say? Yeah, so check your intake with Chronometer or something like that. Chronometer, fitday.com. My son uses My Fitness Pal to track his stuff. He says it's really easy. I've seen him do it. He'll get up from the meal and he just sits down, and within 5 seconds he's got everything logged. So it might take a little bit more setup at the beginning if you have to put in some of your special foods, but that could be good. Yeah. So Lynn, if you want to Repeat that. Did that right? Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right. Janine just said something. Let's see. Janine said there's a module with everything to start your business, live PDF, and all to incorporate. Yes, there is. Yeah, but if there's something like you want to talk to somebody in particular that is not sure how to incorporate it, then if you want, would you be willing to reach out and figure out what Debbie needs? Because I'm not exactly sure. You can ask me specific questions while you're
sure.
here.
And I,
right?
I put my...
Oh, yeah. You can
yeah, I put my...
Okay, cool. And then, you know, Debbie, that's what these calls are for. So if you have specific questions, like, hey, how do I do this? And how would I incorporate that? And I don't know what kind of a practitioner you are, whether you're a health coach, nutritionist, MD, DC, ND, and that would vary. And I'm probably a really good one to answer those questions. Just come on and ask me. So, yeah, so that's right. I mean, says tracking food will show you if you're getting enough calories and if you need to eat an extra meal. That happened with one of our, he was falling to a T. He said, Blade, I'm doing 6 hours between meals and I only have time for two meals a day or it'll get too close to bedtime. He was like falling it to a T and he's losing weight. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to tell you something I don't normally tell people, but keep it a secret between you and me. And he says, what? He said, eat three or four meals. You're not eating enough and you can space them a little closer together. Don't be concerned. And it worked for him. And he was able to not lose weight. Now, the last time I talked to him, he said he had gained 10 pounds. So that's really exciting for him. And he's working out, so he's putting on muscle. Right. So we have to figure out if somebody's super thin, what is the problem? Is it that they have a very high metabolic rate or are burning more than they can? And that's really like in a catch-22 situation because if it's a tiny person, because you're thin and then you have a high metabolic rate, it's really hard to eat enough and you do have to eat more frequently. So I will say that that's an exception. Everybody's unique, so you're going to come up with unique approaches to each person. Not everybody's going to be able to follow all the rules. Make sense? Mary says, I have a simple meter, six from Walmart or Walgreens. Is that okay? Yeah, go into the glucose testing module, and there's a chart in there where we show you what our top-rated meters are. They're not all the same. They're not all as accurate. And we have a whole bunch listed in there. I personally like the one that's discontinued is the, what's it called, True2Go. And the second best, in my opinion, is the Keto Mojo. And the third best is that Rely-On from Walmart. Rely-On Prime. From Walmart. Those are the three that are as close and repeatable. They're a little bit higher. Some of them read a little higher than my meter that I wear on the arm, the Freestyle, or higher than the True2Go, but they're close. Like, they're similar. Some of them are awful, and I just, like, threw them in the trash. I would measure, you know, I measure them five times in a row, and it was completely different every time, and I did that repeatedly. My fingers were killing me after several days of doing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pricks a day. And Angelica said, well, Rely-On Prime works amazing for me. Great. Great. Super. It's what I found with Rely-On, I could just keep testing it and keep testing it and keep testing it. It was always within like 3 points every time I tested it. So I felt like it was pretty amazing. And it's less expensive than the Keto Mojo. Keto Mojo is about $50. If you go to thesweetspotsolution.com/, I think it's Keto Mojo. Is that right, Lynn? I think that's where you go and you can actually get a discount on the Keto Mojo. I think they give you 15% if you use my link. Who else? Let's see.
There's that question in the Q&A.
Okay.
From Angelica.
Seeing people intermittent fast and then eat several meals within the span of 5 to 6 hours. Is that a good exception? Yes, that's fine. If you're going to be doing intermittent fasting and you're basically shrinking your eating window to like 6 hours, then you can do multiple meals within that 6 hours. And it depends on how thin you are. Ideal would be two, one at the beginning of the window and one at the end, but it doesn't always work well enough that way, especially people with a high metabolic rate. So you can almost pretty much eat. I don't like continuously, but if it's only a four or five hour span, then it's not a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah, it's because you have that long fasting period, which causes the insulin to go down and the growth hormone to go up, and it's amazing, yeah. So step by step, guys, it's one step at a time, one module at a time. Just go in, follow the directions, start at the beginning. In the first two module pieces in the intro piece, a lot of similarities to what we talked about today, but going a little bit more in depth. I didn't want to repeat everything 100% because it wouldn't be a good use of our time. But I'm going to give you a starting point for giving you a tour of the site and how to use things in there. Okay? All right. Well, we're going to call it a night. Thank you, everybody, for being here. I appreciate it, and we'll keep you posted. There we go. You guys are invited to our monthly office post calls. You have 5 months for those, and those are usually done in the second or third, I don't remember, week of the month. So you'll get those in, I believe you're going to get those in August, September, October, November, and December. So you'll basically have support through the end of the year. So I really highly recommend you take advantage of those, because the more you go through the program, the more you're going to ask questions, the more you're going to think about people to apply it to, whether it's yourself or family members or clients. You're totally welcome to come to our calls for the practitioner calls and bring case, your own case. It's a great way for all of us to learn. We do have, if you join the sweet spot part, you'll get access to a monthly call that's for clients, and those are strictly for client questions, like your own questions, your own health. You cannot ask about your client on those calls just because it's not set up for that. So thank you, thank you, thank you, everybody. I appreciate you being here, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye. I'm going to open up your line, Susan, say goodbye to each other. Bye, everybody. Thank you.